I want this evening to look at a passage in our Bible from the book of Luke, chapter 17, verses 11 through 19. And this is a story that I'm sure many of you are very familiar with, involving these 10 lepers and the idea of showing gratitude and thankfulness. And of course, Christianity ought to be a life of showing gratitude and thankfulness. I think of, for example, Ephesians 5:20, that we are to give thanks always. And so we ought to be people who are grateful. As I was studying for this lesson, I came across a story about a family. And the story went that this family, every January 1st, gets a jar and they label it the gratitude jar. And they put it in a prominent place in their home. And throughout the year, the various members of the family, if there's something that they're grateful for, maybe a good meal, maybe a kind word, whatever it is, just small things that they're thankful for in life, maybe some big things they're thankful for, they'll write down on a little slip of paper, whatever that is, and they'll put it in the gratitude jar. And then their tradition is every December 31st, New Year's Eve, they sit around the table and they open up the jar, they dump out all the pieces of paper and read the things that they've been thankful for throughout that year. I thought that was a pretty neat thing to do, to focus your mind, to force yourself to look for things to be thankful for. Human beings have the ability to complain, don't we? In fact, we like to do it in many instances, even amongst God's people. Read the book of Numbers, for example, and you'll read all about even God's people complaining quite a bit, and you'll see how God feels about that. God is looking for gratitude in us and thankfulness in us, and we ought to exhibit that. I don't want to minimize what you've been through if you're going through some sort of trial right now. Certainly not trying to minimize that, but here is a fact. Regardless of what is happening in your life right now, God has been good to you. In fact, he's been far better to you and I than we deserve. He, of course, Matthew 5 says, makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends the rain on the just and on the unjust. Even evil, wicked people in this world, God has been good to them today. They are benefiting from the blessings and the gifts of God. And of course, you and I, as being Americans, having the blessing of living here, can you stop and think of all the times you could have been born? You were born where you are in this time, where we have modern medicine and so forth. In fact, I've told my wife before, one of our sons, our youngest son, has had bad asthma. He's had to be hospitalized before. I told her, I said, you know, it just hit me that if, say, this were 1800, he likely would have died. We wouldn't have had any way to help him. I'm thankful for the things that we have. But so of all the times I could have been born, I'm born where I see this time. And of all the places I could have been born, I've been born here. The most wealthy nation in the history of the world, and the freedom that we have and the luxuries that we have an embarrassment of riches whenever you stop and think about what the Lord has blessed us with. We are very well acquainted with the blessings of God. But I want to let you know that there's a couple of dangers that we face. Number one, it is easy in the midst of such comfort and luxury like you and I have to start taking those things for granted and to allow them to blind us where we forget about God. Another way to put that is, it is easy to fall more in love with God's stuff than God himself. And so I think, for example, in Deuteronomy chapter 8, starting in verse 11, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God. Of course, this is Moses talking to the people before they are ultimately going to go into the promised land. Don't forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them. Does that sound like the place where we live? The luxuries that we have? You know, in America, you might have heard me say this before, but friends, this is true. We are so wealthy that we don't even know how to define poverty anymore. In fact, in America, you can be considered poor in poverty and yet overweight because you eat too much. Well, I'm telling you, that is not poverty historically. That's an American thing. But notice, you've eaten, you're full, you have these beautiful houses, dwell in them. When your herds and your flocks multiply, your silver and your gold are multiplied. and all that you have has multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And so, in the midst of such comfort and luxury, there's a danger in forgetting about the one who gave us these great things. And another danger in blocking our gratitude, if you will, is allowing ourselves to so focus on the things that are negative in our lives that we become blinded by those things. The example that I think of, for example, is Daniel. You remember Daniel was taken from his home as a youth and ultimately taken to Babylon and lived under that system. He was made a eunuch and ultimately was elevated through the ranks in the government there in Babylon. Then the Persians defeated the Babylonians, and he was part of that government. And you remember, there were some individuals that were jealous of Daniel and ultimately had a law passed. And the law was for Daniel. I mean, this wasn't a law that was put out there because these people were just trying to catch everybody that prayed to God. This was for Daniel. They were targeting him. And you remember the law was, if there was anybody that petitioned anybody, any god, for what, a month or so, other than the king himself, King Darius, that they would be thrown into a lion's den. This law was for Daniel to put him to death. And of course, the Bible says in Daniel 6 that Daniel knew that the writing was signed. He wasn't ignorant of it. It's not as if he prayed and he wasn't aware of what the consequence was going to be. But that's not the point I want to make to you here. It hit me when I thought about that. If I were Daniel, what would that prayer be? If a law was passed in America today that said, if you worship the God of the Bible, we will kill you for it. If that law was passed today, what would my prayer be? And as I thought about it, to be quite honest with you, I think my prayer would consist of, Lord, please fix this. Help me get out of this situation and that sort of thing. All right, this law has been passed for Daniel, ultimately to throw him into a lion's den. Daniel knows the law is passed. He prays. He kneels down on his knees 3 times and did what? And gave thanks. Wait, you mean to tell me that even as a prisoner in a land that is not your real home, and a law's been passed targeting you to put you to death, even then, there's something you can thank God for? Oh, yeah. Again, I'm not trying to minimize anything that you and I have been through or anything that you might be going through right now, but there is never a situation where you and I can rightfully say, I have nothing to thank God for today. No, friends, there's always reason to thank him. In fact, I saw this quote, and I thought it was profound. A lady by the name of Sarah Breathnock, she's an author. She said this. She's not a Christian, but she has this right. She said, both abundance and lack exist simultaneously in our lives. That is to say that we all have a lot of things, and there are some things that we don't have that we wish we did. Abundance and lack exist at the same time in our lives. It's parallel realities. It is always our conscious choice which secret garden we will tend. Which one am I going to focus on? When we choose not to focus on what is missing from our lives, but are grateful for the abundance that is present, love, health, family, friends, work, the joys of nature, personal pursuits that bring us pleasure, the wasteland of illusion falls away and we experience heaven on earth. I thought that was profound. The idea is, I mean, listen, you can choose to focus on the things that you don't have, or you can choose to be grateful for the things that you do have, and your life will be a whole lot better if you do it. Here's the point I want to make to you. I heard Melvin Otey make this point one time in a lesson, and I never forgot this statement. God is in the blessing business. Friends, that is just true. If God woke you up this morning, he has been good to you. If you have air in your lungs right now, God has been good to you. If you have food in your stomach right now, God has been good to you. If you have clothes on your back right now, God has been good to you. If you have a roof that's over your head that keeps the rain and the elements off of you, God has been good to you. And you could go on and on and on. Friends, we don't have the time here tonight to discuss all the ways God has been good to us just today, let alone the entirety of our lives. God is in the blessing business. In fact, of course, you know the verse, James 1, verse 17. Every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. That is, every good thing that you have, every one of them, is a gift of God. So God is in the blessing business, and you and I ought to show gratitude. Now, to highlight that point, we're going to go to our Bible, to Luke chapter 17, and look at this example of these 10 lepers. We'll read it all together at first, and then go back and talk a little bit more closely about some of these things. It says, now on his way to Jerusalem, of course you remember Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem here ultimately for the last time, where he's ultimately going to go and be crucified. On his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance. And they called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go show yourself to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and he thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. All right, let's talk a little bit more about this. Number one, I want you to notice here a pathetic plight. Notice what it says. That he entered a certain village, there met him men who were lepers who stood afar off. Now, in order to appreciate this whole story, you have to know something about leprosy. Now, many times if you look up leprosy, you might get a definition of the most extreme form of it or the kind of it where parts of the body might rot and fall off and it's just a terrible thing. But leprosy seems to be a term that could apply to a number of various skin conditions, some of which today we might not even consider all that serious. But leprosy, every time a person had it, whether it completely destroyed their body physically or not, ended life as the person knew it. That is, so the social life, your normal social life was over. In fact, here's what the Bible says. You go to Leviticus chapter 13, and it gives some direction for how to deal with leprosy. It says, now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn and his head bare. And he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. And so that lets you know why it said the lepers that were crying out to Jesus stood afar off. This is what they were supposed to do. They weren't to come close. They were to cry unclean. He shall be unclean. All the days he has the sore, he shall be unclean. He is unclean, and he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. The procedure, from what I understand from reading Leviticus, is the person who possibly had leprosy would go show themselves to the priest. The priest wasn't a doctor. It wasn't his job to heal a person, but he was an inspector and would declare if a person had leprosy or not. And if they did, they were ushered outside of the camp. In fact, Numbers chapter 5, starting in verse 2, commend the children of Israel that they put out of the camp every leper, everyone who has a discharge, and whoever becomes defiled by a corpse. You shall put out both male and female. You shall put them outside the camp, that they may not defile their camps in the midst of which I dwell. And listen, friends, it did not matter what your status was. It did not matter which family you came from. If you were a leper, it ended life as you knew it. In fact, you remember going back to Numbers chapter 12, you remember Miriam was struck with leprosy as a result of her sin along with Aaron. And when she was struck with leprosy, of course, God ultimately allowed her to regain her health, but for a time she was a leper. And notice that even Miriam herself, the sister of Moses, was shut out of the camp 7 days. So it didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter which family you came from. If you had leprosy, your life was over as you knew it. In fact, one scholar referred to leprosy as nothing short of a living death. That's what it was. It was to be cut off and outside the camp. So I want you to imagine you're somebody that lives back in this time period, and one day you wake up and you have this maybe spot on your arm, and you're hoping it's nothing, but you go show yourself to the priest, and ultimately it's determined you have leprosy. And you're ushered outside the camp. If you hugged your kids that morning, that might be the last time you ever hugged them. If you hugged your wife that morning, that might be the last time you ever hugged her. You are ushered outside the camp, and life is effectively over. And you are now at the mercy of other people. You are going to live in true poverty, and life is going to be a lot harder than you planned on it being. That is the condition these men were in. They had leprosy. They were cut off from their normal lives. And they see Jesus. I don't know how they knew Jesus. The Bible doesn't tell us, but they knew his name, and they even called him Master. They said, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Have pity on us. Have compassion on us. Look at the condition that we're in. Look at what we're going through. Notice us. Please do something. You can do something about it. Please have mercy and compassion and pity." Well, Jesus is a powerful healer. And this is interesting to me. It said, so when he saw them, he said to them, "Go show yourself to the priest." In my mind, I may be wrong about this, but in my mind, Jesus doesn't really even stop walking. It's like he's going along, and they cry out to him, and he says, "Go show yourself to the priest," and kind of keeps on going. Notice he doesn't say to them, you're clean, you're healed, I make you better. He doesn't say anything like that. He simply says, "Go show yourself to the priest." Of course, that's what the law called for in Leviticus chapter 13. The priest had to inspect the person to announce whether or not they were permitted to come back into the camp, back into society. There's something about this statement, though, that stands out to me. Notice that. "Go show yourself to the priest." Made me think of 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3. This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. Have you ever noticed that God's commandments are simple? God doesn't ask us to do things that we can't do. They're simple. Now, there's difficulty in humbling ourselves many times and simply submitting and doing what he tells us to do, but to do the command itself is a simple thing. That's how God operates. And it takes man to come along and add his own spin to things that makes it more complicated, but God's commandments are simple and they are not burdensome. And so, go show yourself to the priest. The other thing that stands out to me about that section is grace plus faith equals healing. You remember Ephesians, 2:8-9? "For by grace you have been saved through faith." Of course, grace, that's what God does. Faith is your response to it. That's how faith is how grace is appropriated. Notice, "Go show yourself to the priest." And so it was that as they went, you understand that when they first turned to go, they weren't already better. And so there was some faith that had to take place that something good is going to happen if I just simply do what he says to do. But notice, they were not cleansed at the point they believed. They were cleansed as they went, as they obeyed. Of course, the same is true now. Whenever God lets us know what he wants us to do in order to be right with him, we are not saved at the point that I simply believe that, yes, that's right, that's correct. We are saved whenever we do it. Of course, you think about Hebrews chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. "Though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered, and having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all them that," what? "Obey him." They were cleansed as they went. Notice that it says, "And one of them, when he saw that he was healed." I don't know, fully how this happened. I don't know how far they had gone. I don't know, how they noticed that they were better. But in my mind, the way I see it is they're going along their way to go show themselves to the priest. And maybe one of them looks down and he sees that his skin is clean. He doesn't have the spot anymore. And maybe he announces to the others, "Hey, it's gone, I'm better." And the other ones look at themselves and say, "Me too, me too." And he kind of goes down the line and they start celebrating this great thing. And then apparently 9 of them, excitedly I'm sure, went on their way to hurry up and go show themselves to the priest. Now the Bible doesn't tell us fully what they were thinking. I don't think it's hard though to imagine what somebody in their condition would be thinking. They're going to go show themselves to the priest so they can hurry up and get back to their family, back to their life, back to everything that they've been missing out on. We don't know how long they've been in the condition that they've been in, but they're ready to get back to it. But one of them, this Samaritan, we'll talk more about that in a little bit, when he saw that he was made better, he returned. And with a loud voice, he glorified God. And he fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. I want to make a few points to you about the nature of his praise. Number one, he returned. The Samaritan likely had a family. The Samaritan likely had a life that he was eager to get back to. Of course, he had to go show himself to the priest. But the priest was going to have to wait. And his family was going to have to wait. And getting back to his normal routine was going to have to wait. All of that was going to have to wait. He had to go return to Jesus and thank him first. It took priority. Friends, that makes me think of Matthew 6:33, a verse you know very well. In fact, this is one of the very first memory verses I learned with Jeff whenever I was about 15 years old. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. That's priority. I think about Colossians 3 and verse 4, Christ, who is your life. He is the priority. He's everything. He is my life. I think about, for example, individuals that whenever the saints are assembling together on the Lord's Day, that will prioritize other things than the Lord, things above the Lord. I'll give you one example. Years ago, when I was doing youth work in Georgia, there was a man that morning that on Sunday, it was Super Bowl Sunday, and that morning there was a brother who led singing, did a fantastic job leading singing. And I went up to him after worship was over, and I told him, you know, brother, man, great job leading singing today, and I love you, and I look forward to seeing you back tonight. He was normally there whenever we came back for the second service. And he looked at me as serious as he could be. I said, oh, no, I'm not going to be back tonight. And I said, oh, why? I thought maybe he was going to be at another congregation visiting or something. He said, tonight's the Super Bowl. Almost incredulous. What do you mean why I'm not going to be? It's the Super Bowl tonight. And I laughed because I thought he was joking. And he wasn't. He was being absolutely serious. Here's the Lord who has suffered and died for him, but he couldn't miss this football game. It took priority for this man. He was going to thank God first. Everything else could come second. I have to go to Jesus first. But next, it was unashamed. He did it with a loud voice. Oh, the people around, they might hear you. They might hear you thanking him for what he's done for you. He doesn't care. He's unashamed. I remember, to use a personal example, back whenever I was 15, 16 years old, I was new in the faith, I was not very mature, and I remember I was with the youth group. Jeff took us to Nashville. We went to the, I think, Opryland Hotel, and we went to this section where there was like a gazebo, and the youth group went into this gazebo, and he said, hey, let's sing some songs. And we were singing various devotional songs, and I remember vividly being embarrassed because people are around here. They can hear us. Well, that was foolishness on my part, I readily admit. But friends, we ought not to be ashamed for people to see us worshiping God. We ought not to be ashamed for people to know that we belong to him, that we love him, that we serve him. This man was unashamed. He did this with a loud voice at Jesus' feet. It was respectful. He glorified God. The word there that's translated as glorified, it means to enhance the reputation of another. The idea here is that he is a man who has benefited from the goodness of Jesus Christ. He is a man who has benefited from the goodness of God, and he finds it appropriate to express his gratitude publicly in thanking God and enhancing his reputation so that other people know just how good he is. He found that to be an appropriate thing to do, and he was right. It was humble. He fell on his face. You know, friends, you and I ought to thank God every single day for the things that he's done for us. And we ought to thank him for his blessings with the understanding that I don't deserve any of this. I don't deserve your goodness towards me. I don't deserve these blessings from you. It's not that I'm so great that you're just giving me what I'm owed. In fact, I'm sure you've heard before, if we were to say to God, give me what you owe me. Okay, Romans 3:23, all have sinned. Romans 6:23, wages of sin is death. If we were to say, give me what you owe me, that's what it would be. That's what we're owed. We have to have humility whenever we thank him for his great blessings. And it was showing gratitude. It was giving thanks. He gave thanks. He was expressing his gratitude towards Jesus for what he had done. Now notice the motivation of his praise. Number one, he was motivated to do all of this because he had a great benefactor. How do you suppose these 10 lepers would have felt if Caesar himself had showed up to their village and said, here, I am here to offer you some gift to help you out because I care about you? You think that that would have an impact on somebody? Caesar himself took the time to come talk to me and help me out and care about me. Caesar, the most powerful man in the world? And yet one far greater than Caesar had paid attention to them that day. They had a great benefactor. And they had a great need, as we said, leprosy, the living death. That was their life. Their social life was over as they knew it. They were outcast. They were alone. But they had received a great gift. Jesus cleansed them. He gave them their lives back. In fact, I would argue, gave them something even better. Christians should be in the thanksgiving business if it's the case that God is in the blessing business, and he is. Then Christians ought to be in the thanksgiving business. You only have it as good as you have it because God has allowed it. If we're not careful, we'll think to ourselves that the good things that I have in my life are the product of me. You see, I'm intelligent, and I have a good job because of my intelligence, and I make good money, and that's why I have these good things in my life. Or, you know, I've worked very hard, and while other people partied, I went to school and studied and made sacrifices, and that's why I have the good things that I have. Listen to me. There are people who work far harder than you do every single day of their lives, that walk for miles just to go get water, and then go sleep in literally a trash village. I saw a video just the other day of some undercover footage from North Korea, and it showed people out working hard in a field, and they don't even get to eat any of the food that they were cultivating. It goes to Kim Jong-un and his people, and they're starving to death. I mean, they're skin and bones. They look like people from a concentration camp gathering all this food up, doing all this work, and then they would go out and gather grass. And I don't mean some sort of crop. I mean the kind of grass that grows in your front yard. Gathering grass because there were people that were going to eat that. My point is, you have it as good as you have it because God has permitted it, because God has allowed it. And we cannot think to ourselves, oh, it's because of my hard work, and it's because of my intelligence, it's because of my sacrifice. No, sir, not at all. Every good thing that we have comes from God, and we ought to then be in the thanksgiving business every single day. Notice then some probing questions that Jesus asked these men, or this man, I should say, the Samaritan that came back. He says this, were there not 10 cleansed? That's the first thing he says. Notice the implication of the statement. The idea here is, it's like Jesus saying, I healed 10 people, correct? And of course the answer is, of course he did. The implication is, if I cleanse 10 people, then there should be 10 people here right now. There ought to be 10 people doing what you're doing right now. Where are the other 9? We'll get to that statement here in just a second. But notice that that question highlights the fact that Jesus expected them to show gratitude. Let me give you a story real quick to highlight this principle. Years ago, when I was in Georgia, once again, doing youth work, there was a lady that about 3 weeks before Christmas showed up to the church building. Here was her story. She said, my husband left me, and I have virtually nothing. It is everything I can do to keep a roof over my children's head. She had two little boys, about 5 and 7 years old. It's everything I can do to keep a roof over their head and food in their stomach, and that's it. I can't do anything else. I don't have a dime after I provide those things, and even those things are not, I don't really have enough to even give those things. I need charity. And Christmas is 3 weeks away. And I don't have money to get them a single present. My boys are going to wake up after their dad has left us and not even be able to have a present on Christmas Day. Would you, this congregation here, be willing to help us out and buy a bicycle for each one of my boys? The congregation decided to help this lady. And the elders had me be the one to go and I guess facilitate this. She said, well, I can't take them right now if you were to get them because I don't have a place to hide them. I'll come back just a few days before Christmas and pick the bikes up and then I'll be able to take them and give them to my sons for Christmas. We say to her, okay, fine, that's great. Hey, we hope to see you in Bible class. Here are our times. We'd love to get together with you, study with you, and gave her all the information. 3 weeks goes by. We don't see her at all. She doesn't come to a Bible class. She doesn't come to worship. Nothing. But she calls back on the day that we had decided that I was going to meet her up at Walmart to go pick these bicycles up. So I meet her up at the Walmart. I go into the store. She picks out the two bicycles. We buy them. I am wheeling them out to her car. As I'm wheeling them out to her car, I say to her, you know, we've been looking for you. I hope that we'll get a chance to see you in Bible class, worship, be able to study with you and so forth. And she said, oh, I've been traveling around the community and just trying out different churches to see which one works for me. And of course, here we're the ones loading the bicycles up in her car. I loaded the bicycles in the trunk of her car. Friends, I'm not exaggerating what I'm about to say. I put them in her trunk without looking at me. She closed the trunk, went, opened the door to her car, started it, and drove off. And we never saw her again. She did not look at me, not a head nod, not a thumbs up, not a thank you, nothing. Now, we did not buy those bikes for that lady so that we could hear her say thank you. But was there an expectation that at the very least there would be that? People treat God like that every single day. God pours out blessing after blessing after blessing, and man just says, give me more, give me more, give me more. Or even worse yet, says, you're not even the one who's giving me these things. It's because of me. People treat God like that every day and show ingratitude for the great things that he has done for them. Jesus, by asking this question, indicates there's an expectation from God that we show him gratitude. Now notice this, that these men say that the nine that didn't come back, you know, where are they at? Again, we already said they're probably on their way, excited. If you were to say to these men, are you glad that you've been made better? What would they have said to that? Yeah. Are you happy? Yes, I have a lot of joy. I'm happy. Notice then, there is a difference between being glad about God's blessings and showing gratitude for the same. Those are not synonymous ideas. I can be, oh, I'm glad I got this and not show gratitude. And that was the nine. Then he says, where are the nine? The thing that hit me is what happened to the nine immediately is often what happens to us over time. Here's what I mean by that. They immediately got so wrapped up in the blessing that they forgot to go back and thank God. They were just wrapped up in the happiness of experiencing the blessings and forgot about God, apparently. And many times that happens to us over time. Here's what I mean by that. Anybody here remember, and I'm sure you do, you remember what it felt like whenever you obeyed the gospel? You remember what it felt like whenever you got in your bed for the first time after obeying the gospel? I remember that night vividly. I remember laying in my bed that evening after I obeyed the gospel and thinking to myself, if the Lord comes back in the middle of the night or something happens and I just don't wake up, That's okay. And I remember being so excited and so joyful. And of course, many of you can say the same things. And sometimes what happens is initially when we first obey, we're excited and we're on fire and we're happy and we're grateful. And then as time goes by, it can kind of dull if a person's not careful. I'm telling you, one of the things that will insulate us from developing that attitude is the Lord's Supper, doing that properly, making sure our mind is focused. You know, it'd be hard to be apathetic if you're taking trips weekly to Calvary. But notice what happens to them immediately, many times happens to us over time. Notice, were there not any found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner? Of course, that foreigner was a Samaritan. And that matters because the Jews viewed the Samaritans as what? How did they view the Samaritans? These are dogs. These are apostates. These aren't good folks. These aren't the lowest of the low people. And it was a Samaritan who came back. There's many lessons there for us, but here's one. Sometimes it's people who are most acquainted with God that take him for granted the most. We are so familiar with all of his blessings that if we're not careful, we just start taking them for granted. And of course, I've mentioned several times the physical blessings that we receive, but of course, you and I also know that much more important than those are the spiritual ones we receive, which every one is found in Christ, Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 3. So notice how rich you and I are. We live in the richest kingdom on the earth, and we are part of the kingdom of Christ at the same time. How rich are we? If we're not careful, we'll take that for granted. All right, how can I show gratitude? I'm not saying this is a comprehensive list, but if I want to be like that Samaritan, what can I do to not just be glad about what God has done for me, but to show him gratitude for what he's done for me? Here's some things that I can do. Live a better life. Be faithful. Try to be more like Jesus. Live a life that honors him, that is worthy of him. For me to live is Christ. That's all I can do. God doesn't need anything. All I can do is give him me. Consistent thanksgiving prayers, as we already said, Ephesians 5:20. We ought to thank God every day. If you want kind of a cheat sheet of things you can thank God for every day, you can boil it down into three categories. Three things that you can and should thank God for every day. You know what those three things are? What God has done for you in the past. What God is doing for you in the present. And what God will do for you in the future. Faithful attendance and worship. You know, it's not that we ought to think to ourselves, yeah, I'm going to go to worship because I have to be there. No, I'm there because I want to be there. The Samaritan came back and thanked Jesus, not because, oh, I guess I got to go say thank you after all. No, he had to be there. It was an honor for him to be there. And that's the way it is whenever we come here and do what we're doing tonight. Fervent worship. And so I'm not just here. If I want to show gratitude, I'm engaged in my worship. You know, when I'm taking the Lord's Supper, for example, I'm not looking at my clock and thinking, okay, what time are we going to get out of here? The preacher went a little long today. I want to go eat. Serving others the way that Jesus did. Generous in my giving, not just of my money, but that would certainly be one of the things, but of myself, of my time, of my talents, of my abilities. Mindfulness, that is to say, we ought to constantly realize and think, hey, these things came from God. Don't forget that. Keep that in the forefront of your mind. This came from God. And evangelism. Let other people know about the God that has been good to them. Chris Henry was a young man from Louisiana. He was a standout athlete. He went to West Virginia University. He grew to be 6'5" or so. Tall, skinny guy. They called him Slim. And he went to the NFL. He was drafted in the third round by the Cincinnati Bengals. His dreams had come true. He was overnight a millionaire, and he was going to be able to help his mom get out of the poverty that they had lived in growing up, and he was thrilled to be in the NFL, and he showed great promise, and they were really expecting him to do great things. After his third year in the NFL, he got into some sort of domestic dispute with his girlfriend. And she left the residence where they both were in a pickup truck. But before she could get out of the residence, he jumped into the back of the pickup truck. And then at some point, as she was going down the road, you know, between 20 and 40 miles per hour or so, he tried to jump out of the truck, and he did. And he slipped and fell as he jumped out of the truck, and going about 40 miles per hour, the back of his head hit the cement. And he was rushed to the hospital, non-responsive. He had a very traumatic brain injury. And they call Chris Henry's mother, and they tell her this. Your son's been in a terrible accident, and he's not going to make it. He's not going to wake up from this. And so, Mama, we need you to make two decisions. Number one, you need to decide when to pull the plug, so to speak. And number two, if and when you decide to do that, you need to decide whether or not we can take his organs for donation. Can you imagine you mothers getting that kind of call and having to make that sort of decision? She decided, obviously, to pull the plug, and she decided to donate his organs. His lungs went to a person, his liver went to another person, his kidneys went to yet another person, his heart went to a person, the corneas from his eyes went to an individual, and his organs went out and saved a bunch of people's lives. And several years ago, this happened in 2009, several years ago, those people got together and surprised her. That's the mother in the middle. And these people she's surrounded by are people that have her son's organs in their body, whose lives have been saved because of the decision that she made. And they surprised her, let her listen to her son's heart and so forth. Now, here's the question I want to ask you. How do you say thank you to a mother for her son's heart? How do you say to a woman, you know, thank you, ma'am, for your son's lungs. How do you say thank you for that? And I don't know. But for the sake of this lesson, I think a bigger question may be this. How do you not try? How do you not attempt to show gratitude and thankfulness? Because this gift of life that you received cost her everything. What I'm saying to you is, you and I ought to see ourselves in those lepers. We were the ones who had a death sentence. We were the ones who were in a bad way. We were the ones who were in a pitiful plight. And when we obeyed the gospel, we were crying out to God, ultimately, to heal us. And if we were obedient, that's exactly what he did. And what God had to do in order to make that possible was his son had to die in the most horrific way a person can die. Just today at Columbiana, the lesson was on the cross, and so I've had to spend some time in my mind and studying, thinking about the cross. And you think about how horrific that is, what Jesus went through, being beaten and scourged and spat upon and punched and slapped and crucified and hanging there for 6 hours. And how do you say thank you for that? I don't know. But how do you not try? How do you not live every day trying to show God how grateful you truly are for what Jesus has done for you? The question this evening, instead of where are the nine, is really this. Where are you? Are you living a life of gratitude? Are you living a life that shows God that you are thankful for what he has done for you? Because the gift that he gave you cost him everything. And friends, we ought to be so joyful and filled with so much gratitude that it permeates every day of our lives. That's Christianity. And that's what God is looking for in each and every one of us. Friends, if you're here and you are not a Christian, I urge you to make that decision. Jesus died for you. He loves you. He wants you to be with him forever one day, and you can do that if you'll obey him. He said that you need to believe that he is the Son of God, John 8:24. That you need to repent of your sins, Luke 13:3. That you need to confess that he is the Son of God before man, Romans 10:9-10. And you need to be immersed in water for the remission of your sins, Acts 22:16, Acts 2:38, a host of other verses. And then live faithfully unto death, Revelation 2:10. If you've done those things and you've sinned and strayed away, you need to come back to the Lord. Friends, I urge you to make it right with him. If you've sinned privately, take care of it privately. If it's something public, then take care of it just as publicly as a sin was. But make it right with the Lord. He has been good to you. And so I hope when we leave here, instead of focusing on the things that might be going on in our lives that we're not happy about, I hope we can have hearts full of gratitude because we have been blessed so richly by a God who loves us so very much. If you're here, you have something, please come on together. We stand, and while we sing.